Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Back in the 1800s and into the early 1900s, the cattle industry was already big in Florida, but it was different from the big ranches and ranges of the Midwest and the West. Cattle in Florida were mostly left to run wild in the pine woods and the scrub and were periodically rounded up by cowboys, or cow hunters as they called themselves in Florida, who were generally pretty tough customers. During the Spanish-American War, they sold these cattle to both sides in exchange for Spanish gold coins that became, for decades, the actual currency of much of Central Florida. They didn't use dollars, they used gold coins, which is amazing. These people were hardy, independent, Scotch-Irish, poor folks, for the most part, who came down from Georgia and Alabama in search of a life far from civilization. And they came to be called crackers, and their legacy still barely survives today. But their memory lives on among multi-generation Floridians, especially those close to the land and farming and ranching. So, in 1995, an amazing event was organized. It was called the First Great Florida Cattle Drive. It ran for 70 miles through the center of Florida as kind of an historical reenactment involving lots of people on horseback and lots of cattle. Another one like it took place 10 years later or so in 2006, and a third was held in January of 2016. So I was actually able to ride in the last couple days of this last one, and it was quite an experience. I have two guests today. One is Doyle Connor Jr., who was the trail boss, as it's called, of all three of these drives going back to 1995. Doyle is the son of Doyle Connor Sr., a longtime commissioner of agriculture in Florida, and from a family that's very much a part of old Florida history. And my other guest is Stephen Monroe, who's also a multi-generation Floridian, who's been the executive vice president of the Florida Cracker Cattle Association since it began in 1988. Stephen is also a Florida cowboy poet and is very entertaining as a storyteller in that role. Both Doyle and Stephen work for the Florida Department of Agriculture when they're not out riding the range. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Doyle, why don't you just start in by telling us about the cattle drives, what routes have they taken, and so on.
Well, in 95, we had an easier route because there wasn't as much development in Central Florida at that time. So we started down on 60 on the Adams Ranch down there and drove almost 100 miles, almost due north, to wind up in the great and famous Kissimmee Rodeo Arena in Kissimmee, Florida. We drove 1,000 head of cattle to promote Florida's 150th birthday, our sesquicentennial. And we had about 600 people and horses. I think everybody that participated agreed that it was just the adventure of a lifetime. We were lucky in that the weather was perfect on both of the first two drives. This drive, because of development, we couldn't take the same route, so we started south of Kissimmee and moved south, kind of zigzagged south, and drove 500 head of cattle, almost 500 head of cattle, down to Kenansville, Florida, through, I think there were 8 property owners and then the Three Lakes Wildlife Management area of the state of Florida. Almost 500 head of cattle, almost 500 people, horses, wagons, had about 20 wagons. It was, again, a marvelous and wonderful experience, but the weather didn't participate so nicely this time. Matter of fact, last time I laid eyes on you, we were both, you know, looked like bedraggled squirrels in the pouring rainstorms. Mm-hmm. So we had 2 days of rain, but everybody, they didn't just live through it, they smiled through it. It was cold and it was wet, and that was a tough bunch of folks from all over, not just all over the country, but different parts of the world. We told everybody from the start, said, you know, this is winter in Florida, and you're going to be in the woods, and you're going to be camping primitive. So the tagline for our deal was, you know, it ain't for sissies.
Wow, 1,000 people in the first one and 500 in this last one. That's a lot of people. I mean, it's a lot of cattle, but it's a real lot of people. So what are these people like? I mean, I was there, right? So I'm asking a rhetorical question, and I would call most of them kind of experienced horseback tourists, right? Is that pretty accurate?
Well, it's, you know, it was a range of all kinds of people. They were true cattle folk. There were true horsemen that were great trainers and exhibitors of horses. But the average person was just somebody that loved horses and had an interest in history. Maybe their horses were ready for this kind of an endeavor. Maybe they were, and maybe they weren't. Anytime you take a horse and dump him in the middle of 500 other horses, he's going to lift his head and raise his ears and pay attention. Mm. Stuff can happen in those kind of circumstances.
Yeah, I know, and things did. Let's get to that in a minute. But with all those cattle, What breeds of cattle were there? And we talked about crackers, and there is such a thing as cracker cattle. Were any of them cracker cattle?
Great percentage of them were our cracker cattle. We had, and the direct descendants of the Spanish cattle would be considered the Florida's cracker cattle, the Mexican Corriente cattle, and the Texas Longhorn cattle. They're all kissing cousins, and they all come from this same type of genetics. But the Florida cracker cow is a little bit different, and she's a tough and hardy thing that can, you know, live in a parking lot and have a baby every year for you. And the majority of the cattle that were on this drive were cracker cattle.
I think with the people that were along being basically experienced horse people, but not actually cow hunters, I think there were some real cow hunters along there. So who actually drove the cattle? Was it those guys?
Indeed. I had a cow boss, his name was Mike Wilder, that picked the route, and a few of the folks that he trusted to do two things, to really take care of and drive the cattle, number one, and number two, to take care of and drive all of their help. We broke everything into six wagon circles by region, and each wagon circle was able to come forward and drive the cattle one full day. So our cow hunters were, you know, taking care of the cows, but they were also making sure that nobody got hurt or overzealous when they were trying to push cattle or trying to figure out how to use a cow whip or anything like that. And we really had almost no incidents that I know of. We had a couple little things pop up that were unusual. Our cow hunters did exactly what they were supposed to do. They took care of the cattle. My cow boss said his biggest goal was to leave, you know, send out as many cattle as we brought in, and we didn't lose a one. And, of course, my goal was to make sure that that rule applied to the horses and people as well.
Well, that takes a kind of a special kind of a cowboy or cow hunter, somebody who can not only drive cattle but who can basically function as a tour guide and ride herd over a whole bunch of people who are maybe trying to help but don't quite know what they're doing. So that was probably an extra hat for them to wear that made it a little more complicated, but it sounds like they did a good job at it.
Well, we had to weed out a few of the guys that are a little less civilized so that they could get along with and get get across what we wanted to get across. But, you know, there's an awful lot of great cow hunters yet in the state of Florida.
Well, you mentioned that the website kind of warned that it would be roughing it, right, and camping out, and the phrase was, it's not for sissies. So people did camp out, mostly in tents, and you mentioned that it rained for 2 days straight. So, I mean, did people keep their spirits pretty good, and how did they handle being cold and wet? And it was cold, too, so cold and wet for a couple of days straight while on horseback and camping out in tents in the woods.
The day we started, it was like 38 degrees that Monday morning, and it stayed cool for a couple of days, and then the second night's encampment, it started raining, and it didn't stop for like 48 hours, 4.5 inches of rain during that time. I was amazed. Everybody, whether they were city folk, country folk, northern folk, southern folk, young or old, didn't make any difference. They just toughed it out, and every time you saw them, they were smiling. You know, when you introduce somebody to a little bit of the way it was, taking an undertaking and a livelihood to try and get a feel for it that is the same as it would have been 150 years ago, and they got an appreciation for, you know, just how tough it was in those cow woods in the 1880s or yesterday. You know, they're still working cattle the same way.
Yeah, I was impressed, too. I came in for the last couple days, and the rain was just ending at that point. And this thing goes on for 6 days, so I was there as media, so I was able to have the luxury of coming in kind of toward the end. But for the most part, all those 478 people, or however many that were on the drive, were on it for the whole 6 days. And I think only a few people decided they had to drop out, and it was a little hard to get them able to drop out. But for the most part, I mean, there were little children there. You know, there were older people, I mean, quite old people, and it was like the whole range of humanity as far as the demographics of people were there, and everybody was, just like you say, were handling it really well, so I was impressed. It was good.
We were tickled to have so many children involved. When you say it's a lifetime experience, my nieces and nephews went on the second one when they were in their early teens. They talk about it to this day, and the children just add something very, very special. But we had folks from 7 to, I think, 92 was our oldest. One of the cow hunters is 84. Al Johnson. He rode every step of the way. Everybody did. And a lot of the folks that did have to step aside didn't do so because they wanted. They did so because their horse got lame or gimpy or you know, grandma back home had, you know, passed away and they had to fly out. Most of them didn't just weenie out. You know, most of them had a serious excuse, and the rest dead set on proving that they weren't sissies, and they did. And it's not, and I can't impress upon you enough that it wasn't just the fact that they got through it. They got through it smiling, with a smile on their face and a happy heart, and just happy to be there. And that meant a lot to us.
Yeah, even the short time I was there, it was a really memorable experience. It was really, you know, it was really something. And this is the kind of thing that basically doesn't happen anymore. And so it was unique. And you know, congratulations to you for being one of the main organizers and the trail boss of the actual event itself, because I'm sure it took years to put together. You mentioned, Doyle, that basically everything went pretty well, and there were just a couple of crazy incidents, but I do remember one involving a deer. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, everything started out early in the morning. Life was good. It was a sunny day, but, everybody were wearing their big yellow Florida slickers, and everybody's walking along, sauntering along, enjoying a little bit of sunlight, and boom, a big old doe jumps up right in the middle of them cows. You wouldn't have thought it happened, but it spooked everything and everybody. And you know, in a split second, everything was off in a trail of dust.
Or mud.
But our guys handled it. Those of you that know what we're talking about, they turned the front of the herd and back on itself and got them milling and consequently slowed down and then back on the trail without incident at any incident that I know of other than a lot of startled folk and horses. We had a lady on the day before the ride. She was riding a borrowed horse, which jumped up and flipped over backwards on her. And she rode all 6 days and told me after it was done, she finally went to the hospital. She had 8 broke ribs. And this was not a spring chicken. This was a tough, middle-aged woman that just was going to finish. And by gosh, she did.
You are listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Doyle Connor, Jr., who is the trail boss of a great Florida cattle drive that took place in January 2016, and in fact of two others that took place going back 20 years, every 10 years or so. And also we're talking with Stephen Monroe, who is the executive vice president of the Florida Cracker Cattle Association and a longtime multi-generational Florida resident and a Florida cowboy poet. Stephen, we left you out of this so far, but I want to turn to you now. Let's talk about the old Florida Crackers. Why were they called that to start with?
Florida Cracker refers to the pioneer settlers and their descendants who carved Florida out of the wilderness. They cracked corn for a living as subsistence farmers, and they were cowmen and cow hunters, and the crack of their whip, which could be heard from miles across wild Florida, got them the tag Cracker Cowmen or Cracker Cow Hunters. The term now is used to indicate families of the, you know, descendants of those people whose families have lived in Florida for multiple generations. Many of Florida's leaders have been of cracker heritage or cracker lineage. Some of our most distinguished governors, cabinet members, businessmen identify and call themselves Florida Crackers.
Yeah, I think in recent years the term has come to have a kind of a pejorative connotation to it, meaning like a racist or a redneck or that kind of thing, but it really isn't that. In the crackers, the original term was a term almost of pride, really, in the cracker families. Cracker descendants view their heritage with pride, and it has nothing to do with race. It had to do with basically being a tough pioneer. And like you say, coming through the woods, cracking whips and rounding up these wild cattle that were truly wild, that were, you know, almost primeval beasts, and herding them to port, which was something that took a whole lot of skill and toughness to do. So let's talk for a minute about, Stephen, about the cracker cattle that you know so much about. Did the crackers drive their own cattle down to some extent from Georgia and Florida, or was it strictly the wild cattle that were already there?
Both. The Spanish cattle that landed in Florida in 1521 were the first cattle to set foot on the continental United States. They flourished in Florida's wild conditions. Florida's environment was just right for cattle grazing, so those cattle flourished. Later, as the Spaniards established ranches across North Florida, along the St. Johns River, and then across North Florida, those cattle would eventually have spread into other states as well, up into the southeastern United States, as they were left behind in the care of the either just running absolutely wild or left in the care of the Native Americans, they spread further into the other parts. And then in the 1700s, when Florida became settled by the Europeans, the colonists moving into Florida would have driven some of their cattle back into Florida. Some picked up cattle along the way, wherever they were destined for, and those that could establish homesteads had a few cattle. They had more money if they had more cattle to sell. Some of them established homesteads, some established ranches, and some of them established empires off of gathering those wild cattle.
I think even the ones that were driven down from Georgia and Alabama were still descendants of those original Spanish import cattle. So there's a big anniversary coming up soon relating to the Spaniards and the cattle. Why don't you tell us about that briefly?
In 2021 will be the 500th year since Ponce de Leon landed here in 1521. So that should be a great year to celebrate Florida's heritage and Florida's agriculture heritage.
Well, back on the cattle, like, what do they look like? Are they different looking, you know, the original cracker cattle, even though given that most of the cattle in this country are descended from those cattle, or a whole lot of them are, what are their characteristics? What makes them look different?
Well, there have been many breeds imported into this country since the cracker cattle, or the originators of the cracker cattle, were brought here, the Spanish cattle. Mm-hmm. But these cattle are moderate frame, smaller than the average cow, and moderate muscled, well adapted to hot climates of extreme conditions. They are naturally resistant to parasites and disease. The best thing about them is they're able to browse and convert rough forage into milk and subsequently into beef.
About how many of them are there, do you know?
The registry was began in 1990 with a nucleus of 635 cattle that were recognized as the purest of the pure and set forth as being the foundation for the breed. Since that time, we've registered over 2,000 additional cattle. So the whole breed now, the registry is up to 2,720 animals, which is just a tiny, tiny number compared to the world's cattle population or the United States cattle population.
Well, are they just a novelty, kind of like raising, you know, emus or ostriches or llamas or something? Or do people raise them actually for beef or as breed stock for other hybridizing and mixing in with other cattle?
We do. As a heritage breed, cracker cattle were recognized as American Livestock Breeds Conservancy's priority since they found out about them about 20 years ago. They went to the top of the list for priority for preservation. But not only is a living, touchable, tangible link, these cattle are prized for their genetics, for their ability to withstand extreme conditions, for their fertility. They're known as being very fertile. Like Doyle said earlier, if they have any sort of nutrition, they will produce a calf. So there's a renewed sense of interest in these cattle as modern ranchers are looking for animals that can make it without a lot of input.
Sounds like they add hybrid vigor, what's called, to breeds that they're mixed and bred into. Well, you know, people...
That's correct. People
tend to think of Florida as beaches and Disney World, and by and large, they don't realize that Florida is still very agricultural. And it's not just oranges, either. Every year, it's one of the top, I think, 15 beef-producing states. Do you know, either one of you, how many cows there are of all kinds in Florida today?
We're known as a cow-calf state. We have just under a million mama cows. You know, the productive beef cow is called a mama cow in Florida. We have just under a million head, but them plus their calves, we make our inventory about 1.7 million head of cattle in Florida. So that means that Florida agriculture relies heavily on cattle as part of an important part of our agriculture.
Well, Stephen, I said when we started out that you're a cowboy poet. So can you give us an example of what that's like?
Yeah, we talked about those million head of cattle. They have to have a bull to make those cows perform. They need a bull along and along. So I wrote a little poem a few years ago. You know, our Florida ranchers are just as progressive as anybody as far as wanting the best of the best genetics so we can provide beef for our country. But we have to select these bulls, you know, as the best performing bull we can select to put with our cow. So I wrote this little poem. I got a new performance tested bull. The problem is they tested the wrong performance. Now, he was a champion at eating and getting fat, but his job on my ranch is much more important than that. He made high marks for feed conversion and growing, but I'd eat him out with the cow strutting and crowing. Mm-hmm. I'll ask the vet. He'll know what to do to get old Bully excited and make him work like he's supposed to. He won't get the job done, Doc. He just watches the cows go by. Can't you give him something that will at least make him try? So Doc comes up with this powder. Says put some on his feed every night. And before you know it, everything will be all right. Now Dr. Fry's concoction left my cows with just one option. When old Bully gets a chance, he'll settle every cow on this ranch. His libido has been lifted. His attitude is shifted. Romance is in the air. Come spring, every cow will be a cow-calf pair. What is this magical stuff of jubilation? It seems my money was well spent. I don't know the formulation, but it tastes like peppermint.
He was trying out the bull Viagra.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned cracker horses, I think. Are there really cracker horses, and what are they like?
I'll let DJ talk about the cracker horses.
Okay.
Well, the cracker horses come off the same boat that the cattle did in 1521, so they've been here a long time. Horses began in America and migrated to Asia and didn't come back till 1521. They have, like the cattle, they're a little bit smaller frame, but they've adapted to Florida wonderfully. About a third of them, the Florida cracker horse, are gated and can cover a lot of ground, very comfortable gait. But they're great cow hunting horses. They're great in the woods. They're great through tough. I don't know if anybody in your audience has an understanding what it's like to try to go, you know, at a lope or a dead run trying to catch a cow across Palmetto knees, and it's rough stuff. And these guys can do it, and they can swim like a fish. I remember one of the last pairs, mama and babies, that were talked about, that I heard talked about in Florida. Oh, they were trying to trap her on the east side of Lake Tehopacaliga in Kissimmee, and they hit the water and swam 3.5 miles to the other side to get away, a mom and her baby.
Wow.
They are tough. They, you know, out west they talk about you have a remuda for, so you can swap horses during the day on, you know, when you're working cattle or on the old cattle drives, you had several horses per rider. Well, that didn't happen in Florida. Each rider, you know, each cow hunter had his horse, and that was that. He was with him for, you know, till he died, and he got another one. But, you know, the one difference being, you know, our ground is soft. We don't have to worry about rocks and hoof problems and whatnot as much as they do out west. They're good. They're smart. They can do anything. They go from about, you know, 13.2 to 15.2 is their average size. And not many people have ever heard of them, but those that have tried them like them. And then the old families, like Stephen and mine, you know, we have a lot of respect for these horses and cows from our kinfolks over the years. They're tough. Jeb Stewart said that if he could mount an army on these Florida cracker horses, he would rule the world back in the Civil War.
It's like the cracker cattle and like the crackers themselves. They're just hardy people who can handle the heat and humidity and the bugs and the stickers and everything else that came with Florida. Well, let's see.
I like that analogy to the crackers, yeah, just like us.
Yeah, that's it.
They're tough.
Well, Doyle, do you think the 2016 drive, I mean, you mentioned how hard it is to put together, you know, 50 to 60 miles of contiguous territory. You have to zigzag quite a bit now. And if we do this every 10 years, it's going to be a lot more like that or a lot harder 10 years from now. Do you think the 2016 drive might have been the last great Florida cattle drive?
Well, there's always that possibility. I mean, 10 years from now, I'll be 10 years older, so it'll be under somebody else's tutelage or somebody else pulling the load. But I would never say yes, and I'd never say no. I tell you, we're talking about, you know, we got to do something for that 500th anniversary in 2021, and we don't know what that is yet. But 10 years from now, based on the enjoyment of the people that participated,
yeah,
I'm guessing that some of them will step up and say, yeah, I'll lead it if nobody else will. And I'll bet it'll happen, and it may not happen in exactly the same place. It may not happen in exactly the same way. But it's, boy, it leaves too big an impact on your heart and on your spirit not to let it happen.
Yeah, it was a big thing. It was a memorable thing. I mean, everybody who participated, especially those for the first time, were just blown away by what an impression it makes on you. You know, it's really kind of a lifetime memorable bucket list kind of a thing. So I'll tell you what, to go see hundreds of photos and videos of the drive itself, you can go to Facebook and look up Great Florida Cattle Drive 16, and you'll find it. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff. There were professional photographers and videographers along, and there's a documentary being made of the drive, and some pieces of that are shown there, so it's just fascinating to look through the Facebook page. Again, it's Great Florida Cattle Drive 16. Well, I'm going to end with a short one, I think, another poem from Stephen Monroe. Steve, I think you have a one in, you have one lined up and ready to fire for us, don't you?
Yeah, I'll end with a one that's about, you know, Florida was being settled. Miami became a tourist destination, and Henry Flagler, put a railroad in through and had made a little railroad stop called Tampa. It's now the town of Tampa, but it had mud streets and a hotel and a railroad depot and a restaurant. That's about all. And old Florida cracker named Barkley knew that he could sell his oranges. He had a few oranges on his place, and he knew he could sell oranges to the tourists, direct to consumer marketing, we call it now, and make more money than he could any other way. So he had his little orange stand set up at the train station. As the fancy tourists got off the train, he would try to sell them an orange. And one day the train came in, and a fancy lady with a bouffant dress in the style of the day, you know, a big bouffant dress and her hair up in a big bun on top of her head with a little bird cage in there and her glasses on, spectacles on the end of a stick, came up to his table and she said, "Hey, you, when is the next train in? When's it leave out again? How deep is the mud in that street? And how much are your oranges?" So he invented the Cracker Cowboy poem at that time. He said, "In at 8, out at 9, up to your bloomers, and 3 for a dime."
It was a catchy marketing jingle, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you both, Doyle Cunner and Stephen Monroe, for being on with us and talking about Florida's history and the cracker cattle and horses and the crackers themselves and the great cattle drive of Florida. Been really fun.
Thank you, Court. We enjoyed being with you, and we enjoy spreading the gospel of Florida's history.
And while I'm at it, if you'd like to hear more of cracker cowboy poet Stephen Monroe's poems and stories, and he's got a lot of them, you can call him at 850-510-5419. That's 850-510-5419. Thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.